Today on the PC Gamer Podcast, Bioshock talk without spoilers, of course. LucasArts closes, Tyler tells us about Thief, your questions, and our playlists. Hello and welcome to Peace Gamer Podcast number 349.5. We want to put a little bit of space between 350 just so I can do it right for you guys. We were at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco last week, our hometown, so mm-hmm. We were busy gathering news. Go check out our website. There's a ton of news up there, interviews and things like that. So sorry that we're not at 350 yet. We wanted to do it right and do something special. So look forward to that very soon. So yeah, it's April 4th. It's Thursday. We got the news from GDC to talk about. We got Bioshock that released last week to talk about in a very generalized way about our impressions that will not spoil the game for you. If you do want the game spoiled for you, or if you have finished the game, Tyler just published an article that will help you out with that.
Yeah, it's our conversation about what happened in the ending and
how we feel about it. Who are we for those who might not have heard the podcast before?
No, yeah, we're getting there. Okay. We're getting
just
there.
Just making sure.
Yeah, so I'm Evan Lotte, executive editor at PC Gamer. We got Tyler Wild, senior associate editor at PC Gamer.
Hello.
And TJ, the Hammer Hafer.
Yes, and I'm coming to you in my my Bastion narrator-esque post-metal concert husky voice today.
Yeah, you went to a Viking metal concert last night.
It was quite awesome.
Here in San Francisco. Cool. Yeah. So let's jump right into it. Bioshock, again, we're not going to spoil plot points, talk about the combat and things we like. You know, we might give some details on stuff in the first hour or so. But we will, as we've been doing very much this week with a lot of our friends, I think, and people around the office who haven't finished it yet, we're going to be speaking generally. So yeah,
The floor is covered with eggshells.
Exactly.
Since we all beat the game.
Exactly. Yeah. But we have all finished it. What do we think, guys?
I really, really liked it, actually. I thought it was probably I don't want to be, like, super reactionary because it's still fairly fresh in my mind. It's like a week, under 2 weeks back. But I think it's the most intelligently written video game I've ever played. I would compare it to one other thing that I don't really want to say the name of in terms of how well it handles the storytelling device that it uses. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a really good story and a really good character experience all the way through. There were parts of it that were as emotionally brutal, possibly, as the very end of The Walking Dead. So, you know, anything that makes that much of an impact is definitely a memorable experience, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think after our discussion, Evan and I don't want to speak for you, Evan, but would agree that it's phenomenal, but did feel that the first Bioshock maybe was more of an emotional experience in the way it played with emotions as a mechanic, essentially. Whereas Infinite, the narrative is definitely going for something different, which is good and cool. And, you know, I probably can't stay on the subject of story much without, you know, while still being general, but I still feel it's a really phenomenal game, and it does things different.
Yeah, you know, I think we'll probably be at a point in a couple weeks where we'll disclose and talk about the details of the story itself, how we feel about those in particular. What impressed me most about it, and this is something that was sort of reflected in a video I did last week where I was encouraging people to play the game on hard, which you should do if you haven't played Bioshock yet. If you consider yourself any kind of FPS player.
I played the first half on hard.
You can switch difficulties at any time, which is helpful.
I played the whole thing on hard, and by the end of it, I'm, Evan Lotte, you son of a... because at that point, I had committed, and I'm like, I'm getting the achievement for hard, but It's like 3 a.m. and I've done this three times.
No, yeah, Dan Stapleton and I kind of
wussed out. Is that what you're looking for?
We ticked it down at the same place.
Ticked it down.
I'd like to say it was a tactical decision to change the difficulty. I realized I was in a tactically unviable situation on the difficulty I was playing.
Okay.
Yeah.
What I was trying to say, though, is it's a much better shooter than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
It's certainly a better shooter than the original BioShock.
No, and I agree, yeah.
I mean, at its best, and I think its best is on hard, and hard sort of allows more situations where the common enemies in the game are overwhelming you. Mm. It kind of puts, I mean, you become much more fragile. Your vigors, which are plasmids, essentially, are more expensive, you know, they're less of a you know, get out of trouble free card that they were in BioShock, perhaps. But when you're overwhelmed in those situations, there's this wonderful feeling of making things up as you go and improvising that I really like.
Yeah.
And the Skyline system makes that possible. I think it really enhances that feeling. Skylines aren't present again, these are sort of the aerial like rails that you can sort of attach on with a hand device and basically grind around the world, Tony Hawk style. Mm-hmm. It's not like a transportation system within Colombia. No. They don't really connect the areas and things like that. It's really, they're very local. They're very much like, this is a set piece, this is a level. This is the local skyline here that you'll be able to utilize. But yeah, I mean, just the feeling of like, okay, there are guys at my front left and right at different ranges. They're shooting me. I'm out of health, and I need to get to the other side of this level to get health. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? And just because you're so fragile, and because the enemies are pretty capable. They're very magnetic on hard. They do a good job of being aggressive. You're sort of like, I had all these situations where I was just like, okay, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to throw this vigor down. I escape with a sliver of health, or I get shot at the last second with a sliver of health, and I jump away with a skyline. You can leap onto skylines at pretty impressive range,
right?
And atop that, like, again, encouraging people to play on hard, there's all this stuff that helps you. I mean, there is a character that follows you throughout the game.
Right.
I don't think it's any secret that Elizabeth is a companion, essentially, giving you stuff. It's not constant. It is a balanced aspect of the game. You know, she's not going to like patch you up every single moment you get hurt, but there are all these things there to help you.
I would say
they're easy to take advantage of. Yeah.
My problem was I was trying to finish the game so that I could talk about it with Evan.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I was playing on hard and I was going way too fast.
Oh yeah.
So if you do want to play it on hard, take some time to collect money and upgrade everything. Upgrade your guns, look for gear. Gear, I didn't really like the system.
Yeah.
I got the setup I wanted pretty early in the game, and I'd keep picking up pieces of gear that are like, this is worse for my play style than what I've had for like 5 hours, so I'm just going to kind of ignore the gear system.
It felt a little, yeah. I mean, whether or not it felt afterthoughty, like,
right.
Oh, it's like here's this extra bit of customization that it didn't necessarily need.
Yeah.
Some of the gear is useful. I use this vampiric thing where I would get health after a melee kill, and that encouraged me to use melee, which actually really isn't a good idea in a lot of cases, except near the end, actually.
Yeah.
You can succeed. But I it's exactly what you said, like flying around on the rails and or I like to go off the rails on a crazy train. And they have ways of getting you off those certain mini bosses, and kind of making you rethink your strategy. And it is great, but if you do not go through and upgrade stuff, and at the same time, you also need to be grabbing all of their boxophones, but grab all the audio diaries seriously.
Yeah.
It's my one biggest recommendation.
Oh, yeah.
You will thank yourself. Listen to all of them. Don't just get them and start playing it and then keep going. Like, I wish I had stopped and just waited and listened, because you'll get distracted if you keep running through the game and eating food off of bodies. It'll create sound effects. You might miss a word. And more so than BioShock, where the audio diaries were important, in Infinite, if you want to understand what's going on in the game, you should listen to them.
You can miss like one or two specific diaries that are kind of out of the way, and it'll almost kind of ruin your ability to understand the ending without going and looking something up somewhere.
Yeah. I echo that. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a flaw. Like, it's not something I was upset by. It's just the way the game was designed. They felt like, you know, there's so much explanation, exposition that they didn't want to deliver this piece, you know, from a character standing at you and looking you in the eyes and talking to you. They had to distribute it. And, you know, I think they handled that pretty well. The world itself, how do we like it compared to Rapture, Columbia?
I don't think I like it quite as much from a world design perspective, just because, I don't know, there's something I really liked about the claustrophobic underwater environment of Rapture. It made me feel really paranoid and, like, in a good way.
Yeah.
Like a good horror movie or something like that. I felt like, although Bioshock Infinite does have some pretty freaky segments, particularly the guys that turn into crows. I was not a fan of those. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not as creepy.
Yeah.
Well, it's inhabited, for one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's and not everyone is always trying to kill you.
Right. People are living here, living out their lives. Of course, that's all being terribly disrupted, and they all don't seem to mind that much. But it is weird to go from this, like, huge battle and set piece to you're in another part of the city and people are selling hot dogs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think that paranoia is something that I missed, partly because I was just so fond of the way it was handled in the original Bioshock. I mean, mm-hmm. the feeling of being watched by Andrew Ryan in that game.
Right.
The feeling of, you know, they didn't visually represent that. You didn't, like, walk by a picture frame Scooby-Doo style and the eyes moved. But there was this ever-present, because he was talking to you, feeling of, like, he's got his eye on you. He's a step ahead of you. I didn't get that in Infinite. Like, you know, these games don't have to be symmetrical. I don't think that's what I'm asking.
Although they
for.
Are in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallelisms and symmetry.
But yeah, and just the feeling that in Rapture, you have the feeling that there's just, like, pressurized death all around you at all times. And I don't know, maybe because I'm not afraid of heights, I didn't really get that with Infinite. But,
yeah, I mean, there's a point halfway through the game, I'm not going to spoil anything, where you meet a character that he knows something about you, and there's, like, an elevator, right? And you feel like, he's going to be this sort of, like, Andrew Ryan character to some extent.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I really thought that, like, and you get introduced to, like, his like, this other, like, his henchman, essentially, and he hands you something. And you're like, oh, wow, like, this guy's been watching me.
No, I saw him kind of as the parallel to, who's the, like, the Music Man guy in the original Bioshock.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm like, the fact that they didn't go that direction with it, I'm curious what that would have looked like. Because,
Yeah, and again, talking about the characters, I think one of my gripes is a lot of them were underdeveloped to me, some of the primary characters. I think partly because there were more of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bioshock is essentially the story of it's you and Andrew Ryan. There are, you know, I guess there's a kind of an equivalent amount of side characters, but they're not given the same amount of, like, the time that they're granted in Infinite is much more distributed. And that's partly just the way it's designed. It's a bunch of people involved in the central action and the plot, but I think as just a natural result of that, I was sort of let down by the climax. I was a little bit let down by the ending in some ways. I know, TJ, you like the ending a lot.
Well, it's hard to say what I think about that ending. It's an ending you'll think about for, like, days afterwards. I was still working through parts of it in my head, like, a week afterwards. I believe it was actually our podcast producer, Eric Belsaw, said he got to the end and it was, like, really cathartic, and I didn't feel that way about it at all. As a matter of fact, it was more melancholy than anything else to me. So it's not necessarily a spoiler because we both had complete opposite reactions to it, so it'll kind of be up to you what you think of it.
That's funny, and I think my reaction sort of wasn't very emotional. I got that out of the way earlier.
I had two emotional moments in the game that were not the ending, but we can talk about those when we do our spoiler version. But there were two moments in the game where I was actually, like, really hit hard, like, visibly upset by what was going on. So
cool. We'll look forward to talking about this game with a little bit more detail. I want to give you guys a chance to play it yourselves, of course. Encourage you to do that. I think we all have a positive opinion of the game overall.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Reviewed on our website, of course, in our magazine.
Mm-hmm.
With a good impression. So let's talk about news and LucasArts closing yesterday. Pretty unexected.
Yeah.
So this is following the acquisition of Lucasfilm and, you know, sort of the associated properties by Disney.
Right. And it wasn't, I guess it wasn't completely unexpected because they did put a hiring freeze at LucasArts earlier this year, I think. So there were some rumors that something like that, this might be taking place.
But they had a game in development. They had Star Wars 1313, which was shown at E3 last year. Looked interesting to us. Mm-hmm. I think a lot, you know, visually really cool. Sort of, you know, some uncertainty about how much of an interactive experience is going to be.
Yeah.
But they've stopped, you know, they've stopped developing that. Is that correct?
Yeah, which was really kind of surprising because it seemed like a big budget product with a lot of promise that they had put a lot of work into. I'd like to see it, you know, resurface in some capacity because I was actually looking forward to playing it. But yeah, there seem to kind of be two camps. There's the camp that's like, ZOMG, Disney, you're killing our childhood. Why would you do this? And then there's the other camp that's like, well, technically, the last pretty well-received game LucasArts, the studio, put out was Force Unleashed, probably. And even that kind of had a mixed reaction. As far as, like, the golden age of first-party LucasArts games, that was kind of like the 90s and the early 2000s, and they've kind of petered off. So there are a lot of people saying, well, they're going to keep LucasArts as a label to license to people, which that's what Battlefront was. That's what Knights of the Old Republic was. So we might, yeah.
It's totally understandable for Disney to say, you know, we don't need a development studio here. We have the licenses, and there are lots of third parties who would love to take them and do something with them, and we'll profit off that without the risk of running a studio, and then studios are, you know, inherently very risky.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they're doing with Marvel Heroes, for example. You know, almost all the Marvel games throughout history, you know, they've been developed by Activision, I think. Activision is a license holder for most of those X-Men games and stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's their strategy. Hold on to IP and be a licensor. So,
yeah, I mean, it's obviously it sucks for all the people who are laid off, and we hope they find new places in the industry.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people... Yeah, have this idea of Disney's reputation as being someone who just holds on to IPs and things like that, and doesn't do anything with them. That, you know, they're just trying to control. I don't know if that's accurate, but I don't know. I mean, is there a possibility that their acquisition could at least have, you know, it means that a new company is examining things like, you know, what do we do with X-Wing? What do we do with TIE Fighter? What do we do with Grim Fandango and Monkey Island?
Time will tell. Hopefully. But I would love if they started taking a closer look at some of those older properties for sure.
So it's sad to see a classic PC gaming house close like this, but the brands are still out there, the properties are still out there. Hopefully they'll get some time again in the limelight in the recent future.
I feel kind of the same way I do about BioWare since Ray and Greg leaving. Like, you know, it's a little bit worrying, but I'll wait to see what their next game looks like before I judge whether it actually is the end of the world. Feel kind of the same way with LucasArts' new setup. I'll see who they license to and what those licensors make before I really make any judgments about it. So,
yeah. All right, yeah. So speaking of classic games getting a second shot, a reboot, there's been a lot of that lately over the past few years, of course. Thief, Tyler, you played it? You haven't played it. You saw it.
I saw it. Yeah.
But you can tell us about it.
Yeah, I did feel it was hard to say more than what has been said by Ida's, like, after seeing it, you know, because the demo was very staged, I don't want to say scripted, that implies the game is scripted. It wasn't, but the guy playing it had played this over and over, clearly, so it was hard for me to tell, well, what could he have done there? Could he have gone left? Could he have gone right? Because the idea of Thief is, of course, that you're Garrett, a master thief, and it's sort of known as sort of one of the first games to really do emergent stealth gameplay really, really well, where, you know, there's multiple paths, they're not defined, where most games at the time, I think 1998 when the first Thief came out, were, you know, still along the lines of go get key card, go to door, you know. So that's what it's known for, and it's been almost 10 years since the last one, which is, I guess, 2004. So it's a reboot, and Eidos, you know, all eyes are on Eidos.
You really don't sound very excited about it. Like, that's what's striking me right now.
It's not that I'm... It's that, like, Eidos came to me seeming sort of insecure.
Okay.
Really worried that fans of the, because they're hearing all the time ever since this was announced, you're not going to do it right. It's not going to be a real Thief game. Yeah. It's going to be more like Dishonored or something, which I think we agree is a really good game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, a game which was a lot like
and
Thief.
Yeah, it was basically an evolution of the same mechanics.
So I don't understand why people are using that as a negative. But so they came to me going, no, no, you're still going to be Garrett. Yeah, he has a different voice. But you're still going to use the bow with all these different arrows, and you're still going to use his blackjack to hit people. And look how, look, it looks really, really good. And it's not scripted at all. You can go through these areas in different ways, you know, but I didn't necessarily see a lot of that. So
yeah.
I don't know, maybe my lack of excitement is lack of excitement for the kind of game it looks like right now, which mm-hmm. I mean, right now it does look like a pretty thiefy experience, but I don't know, maybe just after playing BioShock Infinite, I'm like, well, that just doesn't have the gravitas I need. Like it, like I know the story is, it's presumably going to be along sort of the metaphysical lines of mm-hmm. the Thief games. And I never really liked those for the story. It's actually forgot about the story.
Yeah.
In my preview, I sort of defend the reboot by saying, you know, a lot of times we put these up against what we remember, and what we remember about a series is rarely totally based in the truth of what it was. Mm-hmm. Nostalgia, rose-tinted glasses, and all that. I totally forgot that Garrett, like, talks to ghosts and all this stuff. So then I'm remembering, and then I was like, well, but this setting seems different. The city used to be different. It wasn't so industrialized. Why are they going this direction? I'm like, oh yeah, Thief 2, the Metal Age. Like, there's technology in that. So, yeah, so the tone of my preview was like, hey, give them a chance. But as far as what I actually saw, I'm like, hey, can I play it? Like, it's so hard to judge a stealth game based on watching someone who's really good at it play it.
Yeah.
It sure looked like he was able to get closer to people than I would expect. Of course, he has to pickpocket them. Mm-hmm. And he's in the shadows, and but he's doing everything perfectly. So I was waiting to see, like, well, what is the cue to tell me if I'm in someone's cone of vision or not? Yeah. Is it
a HUD element? Is it a bark or something?
And yeah. I asked them about that, and they said, well, you know, we wanted the animations to really express a person's level of alertness. And I'm like, that's fantastic. Yes. If you can do it, if I can actually use in-scene cues to understand, you know, to have situational awareness, that sounds great. But I can't really know that that's the case. And, yeah, I'm also sleepy. I think I haven't recovered from staying up till 4 a.m. playing BioShock the other night.
Yeah.
It's all right. Thanks for sharing that. So,
but Thief does look cool. Oh, and by the way, beautiful. Yeah. Like, that Unreal Engine 3 Samaritan demo is what I compared it to. It might not be the same fidelity, but pretty close. I mean, they showed me a scene where you could see every raindrop. And it's not Unreal Engine 4. It's a modified 3. And I asked them about that, and they told me, actually, 4 is really... They showed that tech demo, but really it's more improvements on the developer's side of things, on the UI side. Unreal Engine 3 can look just as good as that demo, according to them, and it did look really amazing.
That's encouraging. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing your mixed thoughts, your curiosity about that game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's talk about GDC. We were there last week. It's a cool show. Basically, it is what it sounds like. Game Developers Conference in San Francisco. It's a bunch of developers talking to each other, giving panels. There's a lot of like technology vendors for like facial animation, mocap, and things like that on the floor. You know, Crytek showing off their engine improvements and like all the things they can do. It's not E3. You know, it's not PAX. Kind of insulated, but it's good. Like, we as people who cover games kind of get to intrude on that and talk to people. It's a really great show for interviews. So. Yeah, TJ, I mean, what's something you saw at the show, somebody you talked to that was encouraging or interesting or, you know, worth talking about?
Probably, I mean, the defining moment for me personally of GDC was actually getting to interview Chris Avellone from Obsidian, who, by the way, looks like he could probably rip a tree out of the ground with his bare hands if you've never seen him in person before.
He's a strong Italian man.
Yeah, exactly. He's, you know, of Obsidian. He's working on Project Eternity right now and got the stretch goal for Torment Tides of Numenera, so he'll be working on that as well. He was a really fun guy to talk to. We talked a lot about game storytelling, which was cool because that's kind of what has... driven my love of gaming as a hobby throughout the years is just how they exist as a storytelling medium that can do things nothing else can. It's cool because it's compared to other conventions I've been to, granted I haven't been to a ton, there seems to be a lot of more one-on-one time with developers at GDC than some of the other stuff that I've been to. I should have actually written down a list. In terms of games I actually saw that were cool.
And you saw, like, the Magicka MOBA type thing?
Yeah. The new Magicka Wizard Wars looks really cool. It's like a PvP Magicka game that has the same Magicka on-the-fly spell-combining system thing. It's like a capture-point team-based multiplayer, kind of like Dominion mode in League of Legends. I also got to finally play Among the Sleep, which is that Norwegian horror game where you play as a two-year-old. And that was...
Yeah.
It's very... it's very, like, surreal and atmospheric. And I was playing at a brightly lit show floor with noise-canceling headphones. But it looks very promising.
It's first person, too, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's... The way it's presented is there's nothing so overtly supernatural that it couldn't be explained as, like, this is... how a kid might see a normal thing that happens in a house at night. And then it kind of diverges into more fantastical towards the end of the demo. But
do you have a sense of what you do in that game? Because you're a baby.
It's very...
you're a baby.
You actually... you have a teddy bear that's your companion that has a almost creepy older male voice, actually.
What?
But he kind of guides you through. Like, at the beginning, you're trying to find your mother, and, like, she's not in her room, and you start wandering through the house. And it's kind of Dear Esther-esque, it seems like, that it's just kind of taking you through these creepy vistas. Although they did say there are failure states. I didn't experience that myself. So it is possible to presumably lose, whereas in Dear Esther, that wasn't really the case.
But, okay. Yeah, just curious kind of what your verbs are as a baby in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Picking up stuff.
You crawl faster than you walk, but you have to get into, like, the walking position. It doesn't have, like, the same amount of granularity as, like, Arma 3 or anything, but there's crawling
well,
and walking.
Well, damn, I guess I'm not playing this game.
Right, like, there were...
I only play Norwegian toddler survival games that have at least 9 stance,
right?
Like, discrete stances.
Exactly.
There needs to be like 3 between prone and crouched.
When you throw the teddy bear, it needs to actually take into account the physics of your hand and it leaving your hand.
No, I mean, there should be like the variable weight simulation of the teddy bear, where, like, the head is the heaviest.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the foam can, like, sink down if you hold it a certain way for too long. So,
that's really disappointing to you.
Yeah, I know. there's some climbing puzzles. You have to, like, pull out cabinet drawers and, like, push chairs and stuff to reach doorknobs. So
is it the same kind of, like, grip and pull feeling of amnesia?
Yeah, cool. It's like amnesia with, you know, you're 2 feet tall.
All right.
So, yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Great. I didn't see a lot of games at GDC. There weren't really that many game demos happening at GDC. Talked to the EVE Online guys.
Right.
Talked to Tripwire. Saw Rising Storm again. Talked to the MechWarrior guys. The Walking Dead panel was really cool.
I heard that was.
Yeah, I did a little bit of a write-up on it, mostly focused on, this wasn't the focus of the panel, of course. They were talking about empathy, I guess. That was the focus of the panel, but they mentioned, this was Jake Rodkin and Sean Vanneman, sort of the creative leads on the game, the series, and they mentioned that they almost cut Clementine. Like, them personally, like, they were doubting putting Clementine in the game.
Which was shocking to hear, because that's what made the whole thing work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were sort of saying that, like, if they're worried that if the player didn't care about her and she was just sort of this burden that you didn't like, that, like, kind of to put it differently, like, the thought that originated this idea was, like, they're really worried, like, why wouldn't Lee in The Walking Dead just decide to go? Like, these people are jerks.
Yeah.
What's keeping me here? So they needed a child, like a child character, to keep that character there, to keep from just being like, F this, I'm out.
Right. Something had to anchor him to whatever semblance of civilization could be constructed to keep the kids.
He's got to take care of her. He's got to feed her. And, you know, these people help him
right.
achieve that goal. But if they're worried that, you know, if the player doesn't care about Clementine, then she's just this annoying, like, you know, tugging on his pant leg kind of character that you're like, man, this is really lame.
Which, it's funny because
it makes sense.
Yeah, they yeah. didn't Irrational said similar things about Elizabeth at one point too.
Yeah,
which is another companion character that I feel like made the story work. There's actually a lot of parallels there.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad that in both cases they opted to go the slightly riskier route because I think it really paid off.
Yeah, and I think the other interesting side of this, and you can Google it, go check out our article on the website. They were saying that it took them a while. This doesn't necessarily mean like it took them far into the series. We can be talking about like before episode one, the time that they realized this was uncertain. Is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. To get out of the mentality of being a slave to. Wouldn't it be cool if, like, saying that to themselves, like, wouldn't it be cool if we'd put this character in this situation and then this happened? And that was kind of in the context of them talking about the danger of over-branching something, of over-branching a game story. And, you know, they can explain a lot more than me paraphrasing it, a lot better than me paraphrasing it. But they gave this one example that wasn't fully hypothetical. I think they might have dressed it up a little bit. In episode two, there's a farm. And they're saying, like, you know, at one point they're considering, you know, you have to do this and trade this item with this character in order to get this. And then you have to do this and this and this. But, like, the ultimate result of, like, just allowing the player to do all these things and make these decisions was kind of the same thing. Like,
yeah,
the player had to arrive, like, do I want to be here? Do I want to move my party to this location or do I want to be here? And, you know, instead of doing that, they're just talking about the value of being more focused as designers on just creating a connection to characters and allowing you to spend time with them, rather than being more concerned with like the game logic and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, it's kind of, it's a movement away from like old school, I would call it Dungeons and Dragons-esque quest design where it's like, you need the orb of such and such and the talent of such and such to make this thing. So you can go through this door and talk to this guy who will tell you how to get the scroll that will, like, it's not really a story about anything. It's just padding out a narrative with fetch quests, whereas the route The Walking Dead did take, pretty much every meaningful action in that game was somehow tied to something your character would logically be worried about in the scenario that he was in. So,
yeah. All right, so GDC was fun.
It was.
Now in the month of April. No big conferences this month. We got
E3. FanFest.
Yeah, you're right.
That's this month.
Ooh.
Tyler, you're going to you're going to Iceland to visit CCP.
I am going to Iceland. That should be cool.
Yeah, I think you'll like it.
I'm pretty sure I might enjoy Iceland.
Yeah, you might.
Take a guess. But at GDC I did do a few things.
Yeah.
But I don't know if anything's up. I talked to Steve Gaynor, Gone Home, played that. Cool. We talked about the 90s and Bioshock, so that was fun. And I talked to Chris Roberts, too. So
oh, nice.
That's
right.
Should be up next week. Big interview about Star Citizen. New screenshots that they're working on getting me now. So
hey,
woo. Excellent,
great. All right, let's take a listener question.
Hey fellas, after the new PlayStation announcement, I started thinking about the next Xbox and what changes that might mean. And it occurred to me that there's a lot of time and effort put into making the 360 controller the de facto PC controller. I've been playing PC games for about 15 years now, and we're finally just now getting to the point where you can start a game, pick up controller, and it'll just work without having to download profiles or spend a lot of time mapping buttons. I'm wondering, considering how long it took us to get to this point, if Microsoft decides to change the controller for the next console, do you think they'll try to push the new controller onto the PC, or leave the 360 controller in place and make game developers support both of them? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah, I think I'm not worried about Microsoft pushing anything onto the PC.
Yeah.
I think we embraced it. I think a lot of people, a lot of just gamers have Xbox controllers.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, why, you know, it's a good controller. It works.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Why wouldn't I use that instead of buying something new?
And presumably supporting the Xbox 360 controller will be pretty much the same thing as supporting whatever new controller they come out with. you know, the hardware might be better, but the interface probably won't change.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them doing something proprietary, of course. I mean, like, they for example, like, the wireless signal specific to the Xbox 360, like, any device, actually, is proprietary and has to be licensed, which is, you know, like Mad Catz. If they want to make an Xbox controller or whatever, they have to license it or something. So I think, actually, on, you know, for PC right now, there is a dongle that you have to buy or something.
Yeah.
In order to get it to connect, there's a wired controller, of course. I think I prefer that.
Yeah, me too.
But I don't know. I mean, I have to think that whatever functionality the Xbox has, you know, whatever emphasis on Kinect it has, whatever thing it does, it's going to be approximately this. You know, it's still going to be a video game console about shooters mostly, about action games and those kind of experiences. It's going to need a similar controller. And I'd like to think that the next 5 to 10 years of games are still going to support the Xbox 360 controller. It's a comfortable controller for me.
Yeah, definitely.
For racing games, I love it.
Anything with driving, it's like really hard to play with mouse and keyboard.
I really can't use the PS3's non-offset analog sticks at all. I really can't, and the controller's too small.
It doesn't fill your hands. You've got like this concave where you're doing a weird.
Yeah, so I don't know. I've always liked the Xbox controller, and I presume it'll stay pretty much the same. They might add some touch screen thing on the front, or, you know, who knows, or add, I don't know, some Kinect-related functionality, but, yeah, I don't see it changing, really.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, so send us a question for next week, guys. I would love to hear from you. We would love to hear from you. It's the same number as always, 877-404-1337. Extension 724. That's PCG on your touchpad dial or rotary phone. If you have
rotary.
One of those.
If you call in from a rotary phone, I would be very interested.
I don't think it would work, unfortunately.
Yeah, and or you can also email us an MP3 to peacegamerpodcast@gmail.com. Okay, let's talk about what we're playing, what we're going to be playing this weekend.
I think we all know what we have been playing for the last few days.
Right.
I'll cross Bioshock off that list, but TJ, how about yourself?
I've actually been playing a fair amount of Victoria 2, which is a Paradox grand strategy game that's set between 1836 and 1935. Basically, the Victorian era. It cuts off right before World War II, which is... I had a very similar, almost fractal experience with it compared to what I had with Crusader Kings 2, where, like, you first open it up and it looks like you're just looking at a page full of Chinese characters or something, assuming Chinese is not your native language. And then as you kind of learn more about it, it starts to slowly make sense to the point where you kind of know what you're doing, which is pretty par for the course for grand strategy. It's a lot more complicated. There's a lot of, like, economic... you have to, like, build factories and monitor the global market. And the politics system is really interesting because if you have an absolute monarchy, you get to choose policies, but then your people will start becoming more conscious. Consciousness is actually a stat, and they'll, they'll demand democracy and, like, rebel against you eventually if you don't give it to them, if you don't, you know, manage your population's consciousness. So it kind of, in the late game, when you have like a constitutional monarchy or a democracy, it becomes like this weird game of indirect manipulation, basically, where you don't really do what you want. You do what you think will make your people do what you want. So it's a really interesting game. There's like colonization elements, colonizing Africa as like the big European powers and stuff. Expansion coming out for it. In a couple weeks that I just did a big interview on that should be up fairly soon. So
cool.
Yeah, that's been, other than Bioshock, pretty much what I've been playing.
Great.
Yeah.
The continuing stories of TJ's world conquest.
Exactly. Throughout different eras.
Tyler, what are you going to play this weekend?
Probably some CSGO. I've been playing it a bit.
yeah.
Yeah, I've never been that into Counter-Strike before, but I'm having fun. I'd kind of be reiterating things Evan has already said in my praise of it, but I really do like the sort of story of a match and the round system, the sort of starting out, and it's kind of amusing to me that you sort of start with a pistol duel, because that was kind of a construct created for fun by players and shooters at one time, and that is kind of a mechanic is, I think, funny. I think pistol duels are, like, one of my favorite ways to play.
You know, I agree. Yeah.
It's so great, and having everyone on the same, but, you know, but then, you know, you move on through the rounds, and like Evan has said before, you identify a few players who kind of keep killing you because they've figured out where you go, and then at that point, you've figured out where they always go, and they're going to keep going there because if they're being successful, they want to keep being successful. So now you go to the right instead of the left, and you shoot them, and then they're like, damn it. And then they, you know, realize where you've gone, and they try to counter that. So you kind of end up, like, with a, like, repeat duel against a person, kind of like a poker game in the sense that mm-hmm. you keep playing rounds and you keep trying to read the other players, and the more rounds you play, the better you're reading them because you've started to see their tells, and you've started to see, oh, well, he usually folds if he has this, and he'll, you know, he'll definitely, like, overplay this hand if he thinks he has me. So that's fun. I haven't really played it with much teamwork in mind. I know Evan tries his best. I've seen him typing, yelling, are we not talking to each other?
I get frustrated when people don't communicate.
But it is really important, and I would like to see that. Because right now I'm kind of doing this one-on-one duel thing, which is not really what Counter-Strike is entirely meant for. We should be coordinating.
A lot of Counter-Strike is stuff that was not what it was originally meant for, yeah.
But I've had accidental teamwork be really fun. That's cool. Like, totally. I'm a terrorist, I have the bomb, and I go to A kind of expecting everyone to come with me. They all go to B, and I'm like, crap. I'm at A, and now there's a ton of people, a ton of CTs there, and they're shooting me. I'm like, no. So I, like, flashbang, smoke, grenade, and then I run all the way back to the other point. And when I get there, you know, I've got this line of enemies that's tailed me, and now I can plant the bomb, and my team's set up there to defend. And I'm like, I guess I was both the bomb carrier and the bait and distraction. And we didn't mean to do that, but it worked really well.
It's an unconventional strategy.
There you go. Yeah. Well, a lot of, like, random matchmaking games are like that. Like, in Dota 2, when you do solo queue, part of being good at solo queue is knowing what you can expect the other people in the solo queue to do or not do and manipulating that to your advantage.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So it's an interesting dynamic.
I mean, it's so cool in games that without seeing someone's face, without even in a lot of cases, them saying anything in the game, communicating, you're able to sort of intuit who they are a little bit. You assign, like, it is a little bit of, like, in your head, you're assigning some personality traits. This person is an amazing sniper. This person might be a pro player. This person, like, you're starting to think about what age they are, maybe. You're thinking about, yeah. like...
This person always buys the AWP.
They're really aggressive. They're lazy. They're... scared, yeah. they're, you know,
right.
they're a
they
coward.
Don't die. They stay back.
They're playing for themselves.
A lot of the time.
I mean, it's cool that Counter-Strike just, by the nature of what it is, can sort of, like, allow you to understand players that way and kind of develop a relationship with them, develop rivalries. I mean, it did sort of borrow TF2's domination style system, where I think if you kill somebody three times, you have, like, sort of marker on the scoreboard that, hey, you should probably shoot this guy because he's kicking your ass.
Yeah.
But other, like, that system is kind of secondary to, I think, the cool social stuff that just emerges.
Totally. So I'll probably be playing that on PC Gamer's server this weekend. If I get a chance, go to join our Steam group, and you can find all our server information. And we've got some custom maps in the rotation, which, yay, Steam Workshop, you can just find our list and subscribe to our list of our favorite CSGO maps, and then you'll have all the ones on our server,
hey.
And then you can play.
Great.
Neat.
Victory.
Evan, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That sounded so dismissive. Evan, what are you doing?
Evan, what are you doing? What? Probably playing CSGO or Arma 3, Alpha, whatever.
So it's under NDA right now, so I'm not disclosing anything, but the Company of Heroes 2 beta is happening. I'm going to be playing that, and it does feature multiplayer and skirmish mode against AI. We gave away, like, 20,000 keys yesterday on Facebook. Just this is a small, like, non-manipulative reminder to follow us on Facebook, because we give away stuff there sometimes, and
totally.
It might be something that you actually want, which is even better. So I'm going to be playing that, but I started an MMO yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It's an MMO that's very much kind of a shooter.
Okay.
Defiance.
Oh, right, right.
You were I thought about jumping in.
You were playing with Hollander Cooper from Games Radar.
Yeah.
Tuned in for that stream a little bit.
So I'm basically, I'm still in the tutorial, not the, like the introductory zone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's starting to grow on me.
Yeah.
So far, like, you know, I've only played 2 hours, so I'll have a lot more to share next week. Unless we do Cat Fantastic next week. We'll see. I don't know. But it's, you know, it's a third-person shooter in an MMO, and there's sort of some weird compromises with that in terms of, like, my own expectations about how a shooter should feel and look and things like that. The menus are amazing. That's a random thing I love. They're really sharp. But, yeah, I mean, people have compared it to Borderlands. I think that's accurate. You're kind of just roaming around, and there's an emphasis on guns. There's a shield system, for example. The stores have, like, time deals associated with them. So there's definitely a lot of borrowing from Borderlands that I don't have any problem with. I think it's a great game to look to. I'm hoping that it has a sense of humor, because that's something that it's lacking so far. It's a little serious. There's a little bit of, like, action movie-isms, which are kind of self-aware and fun. But, like, in the first 5 minutes, it's like, you crash out of your, you know, you make your, okay, so first of all, let me back up, like, you're on this, like, helicarrier thing. There's, like, an alien and a human race you can play as, and they've sort of united against this common threat. It's actually unclear to me what that is still.
Yeah.
That's how early on
I got the same impression from it, actually. Cool. I don't really know who the bad guys are.
What are we fighting? We're fighting human mutants, but, well, like, where do those come from?
Because it's, like,
anyway.
Yeah, it's Earth in the future when aliens have kind of colonized Earth is sort of...
Yeah,
the setup for it.
But they're hanging out with us, fighting Starship Troopers bugs.
But there's this amazing cliche in the introduction where you don't see your character, you don't make your character until, like, the leader of this, like, you know, human military organization turns and is like, blah, 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 you. And then, like, and then you go into the character customization menu. It's just like, oh, boy.
And
they did that, didn't they?
There's a Sci-Fi Channel show, of course, which is going to parallel it.
Right.
I feel like the Sci-Fi Channel always walks this line between being self-aware or being... or seriously taking this stuff seriously.
It has a similar...
It's actually, like, you almost never really know. It's like... are you doing this to be clever, or did you really think that terrible cliche was a good line? I can't tell, Sci-Fi Channel.
Right.
And sometimes it's pretty obvious, like that when they just kept going with, like, showing Tremors and the various iterations of that, they get what this is.
Yeah.
But I kind of hope, I don't know, I would kind of hope they try to make Defiance an actually good show and game and not one we enjoy sort of as kind of a joke.
Right.
Yeah, it's... I'm not sure if I should say that they showed us some footage of it at one of the preview events.
Yeah, you've actually probably played more of it than I have.
Yeah, right. Well,
before
release. They showed us a little bit of the show at one point, too, which, I mean, it seems it's like a Sci-Fi Channel show. I don't want to judge it too harshly, because, like, Stargate SG-1, I was not a big fan of the first season of, and then it grew on me after that.
Totally. And Stargate's kind of cheesy in that way.
That's what I would compare it to, is it's a little bit more, it's like Stargate SG-1 with maybe a little bit of Firefly. The not to go too far on this, but the main problem I had with Defiance was kind of the pacing of it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a shooter, but it has MMO pacing, which I felt like made all the guns feel really weak, because, like, a Hellbug takes, like, a whole clip from a submachine gun to kill, like, the weakest enemy. So that's kind of the only issue I had with it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's still the case in the current build.
Okay. Yeah. You know, part of the reason I want to play is because I want to feel like I can say I played an MMO in the past couple. The last one I played was DC Universe.
Yeah, right.
Which I enjoy, but I abandoned.
PlanetSide 2 counts.
PlanetSide 2, sure. Yeah, that's right. That is an MMO.
It doesn't have MMO-y stuff.
No.
Like, it doesn't have the tropes we necessarily
associate. Have exclamation
associate.
Points over people's heads,
yes.
Which
right.
Defiance does have.
And that it is what defines an MMO, is does it have exclamation points above heads, and are there quests?
But hopefully it's encouraging. Like, if I'm saying I'm going to play it tonight, I'm looking forward to playing it tonight, and
okay.
I'm curious about it.
Okay.
You know, I'm.
I'll play it with you. Not tonight.
Yeah, no hurry.
This weekend.
I might totally reverse on that. Danny Baranowski, the Super Meat Boy composer, was, like, hitting me up last night to try and play with me. He was, like, super curious about it, too, on Steam. He was like, oh, man, we should be buddies. I was telling him about my forehead and how weird it looks.
Oh, yeah. You're one of the, what are they called?
I don't even remember the name of Alien Race. So, yeah, I'll have more to share on that next week, I guess. We are going to be posting a review. I actually talked to a reviewer on Skype this morning. And he did say, like, he's bursting through the content. So it might be kind of short for an MMO. We'll see. But our review should be up soon about that. Look on the website.
Maybe the idea is that they have a bunch of stuff waiting to go on with the show. Like, there's going to be a pretty big update with each episode or something. I don't know.
Well, they've talked about having crossover, like, certain players who get, like, certain world firsts might show up as, like, a wanted poster in the TV show and stuff like that.
But they said major events in the show should influence the game. So
right.
If the tides turn or something in the show, that should signal a bunch of new content coming in.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's crazy that he's burning through it this fast, though.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I want to give a quick shout-out before we walk out of here. Another game I played actually a little bit ago while I was sick, The Oregon Trail.
That looks really cool.
So it's a zombie spoof, zombie survival spoof of The Oregon Trail, of course.
Right. The old, Apple version that we all played in school.
So it's like very loyal to that. It's like, you know, you start the game and the graphics are almost identical to the original version. There were several, you know, there were probably a dozen versions of Oregon Trail throughout the years, but it's definitely based on one of the most old ones. And like you scavenge, and that's basically the hunting mode. You know, you go out in the wild and basically zombies magnetize and come after you. They walk toward you. There's like a big, like a fat zombie that takes two hits, and you know, there's crawling zombies that are a little bit faster, and basically, like random food items and like bullets or something will appear on that screen. You have to walk to them and pick them up, and survive for like 30 seconds without getting hit or something. It's really brutal. I was playing on normal, and I was getting my ass kicked. Like I was.
Oh, you're getting your ass kicked on normal. The guy who is giving me crap for turning BioShock down from hard.
Yes, I was. I'm sorry. Yeah. So, I mean, there's. And that's fine. I mean, Oregon Trail is arguably one of the first roguelikes, and I like it for that reason. I mean, you're
never thought of it that way.
you're supposed to lose. You're supposed to die. The game is, mm-hmm. you know, the house always wins or whatever. You get diseases. A lot of stuff breaks. Like, there's like the equivalent of wagon axles and stuff. There's wheels and batteries, and there's like something. There's fuel, of course, that you use over time. There's food.
Dysentery. And
there are occasional
snake bite
diseases. Yeah. I was a little let down, like they didn't take the opportunity to make your party anything more than basically a like divided life, single life bar. Like that's kind of what they are. Your party, they consume food and they have a life bar. That's like, they don't have abilities or anything like that. They don't have, you know, traits or something that contribute to you. You can take jobs. You can sort of risk, doing missions, like basically doing a shooting mini game to earn money, earn benefits, earn resources. You can basically like buy combat training that gives you certain advantages. Like you can fire without spending a bullet or something like that. Have a chance to do that. The part of the reason it's so difficult though is the shooting is intentionally difficult, like intentionally sort of frustrating. The mechanic itself. So it's basically like imagine like you're doing a slingshot motion with your mouse. Like you're pulling the mouse back, and that creates a vertical line like from your barrel forward. So you're pulling the direction behind your character while the barrel moves in the opposite, like sort of the inverted direction. Like,
okay. As if it was a bow and arrow.
It's like I'm pulling my mouse at the 6 o'clock position, and that makes my gun point at the 12 o'clock position.
Okay.
If I pull it to the 7, it goes to 1, and so on and so forth. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And there's WASD control through that. And I think it works. Like, I think it makes sense to do it that way rather than, like, just point and click, which was the original Oregon Trail. You just had, like, this reticule.
Right. But the buffalo weren't trying to kill you in the original Oregon Trail.
Were they?
Not in my experience.
There is a zombie bear at one point, by the way.
Oh,
and some zombie
sold. Sold.
So it's a couple bucks on Steam. If you like the idea of, if you have, like, a roommate or a girlfriend or a wife or something, or a husband.
Right.
And you like the idea of, you know, sitting down and playing a ridiculous, very, very loyal to the original parody game of the Oregon Trail. You know, I recommend it. It's pretty tough.
I'd like to try it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe I will, Evan Lottie.
Okay, Tyler Wilde.
Good.
I'm glad I gave you a recommendation.
See you in Defiance.
It's part of our job, providing discovery.
That's right. That's right.
But don't Rainbow. Take our word for it. But,
All right, so with that Reading Rainbow call out from TJ, we're going to sign off this week, guys. Sorry again we missed you last week. We were just so busy at GDC. Please read our coverage. Go to our YouTube page. A lot more stuff still coming, actually, from GDC that we're throwing on the website this week, this weekend, next week. And, yeah, we'll be back next week for episode 350 of the PC Gamer Podcast.
Man.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
We will go get ready for that right now.
I'll have to do more screaming so I can keep my husky podcast voice.
All right. See you guys then next week. Take care.
See ya.